A surge in cycling sweeps Maine and the nation. Have you recently dusted off your bike, pumped up the tires, and hit the road or trails? If so, you aren't alone. Along with baking bread, biking has been one of the boom activities of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's easy to see why. Biking is a great way to get outdoors and exercise in a physically distant manner. And we've had a lot of great biking weather through spring and early summer in Maine. But with so many cyclists on the road, there are hazards. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the bicycling boom, safety tips, new trails and initiatives, and how bike advocates hope that this moment transforms the way we think about bicycle use in the future. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Bike stores across Maine and the country can't keep up with demand. Right now, biking is booming. Today, we're going to talk about the surge in enthusiasm for cycling. We'll learn about some new trails, safety measures to keep riders safe, and a new campaign to get people to slow down. Joining me right now, Jean Sedaris. She is Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. Also on the line with us, Jamie Wright, owner of Gorham Bike and Ski. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about cycling in Maine? Are you considering grabbing a bike from the back of the garage but need some advice on what to do next? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you, Jamie and Jean. Beautiful day for a bike ride. Jamie, I'll start with you. Tell me the story at Gorham Bike and Ski. I have a feeling you have a similar story to bicycle shops across the country, don't you?
Yes, it's been extremely busy this spring. We started out when we closed on the 16th of March. About a week later, we noticed that sales just started continuing to grow as we did only curbside service and sales. And that happened straight through to the end of May. And then we started running out of bikes. And now we're missing a lot of sales because we don't have any product for the entry-level road bikes, mountain bikes, and family bikes.
So all that's left right now are high-end bikes?
Well, we have a lot of e-bikes because we brought a lot of those in to begin with, and a lot of the higher-end bikes. But we are seeing bikes trickle in every day from the major manufacturers. It's just slow coming.
Okay. So if somebody has been trying to buy a bicycle from a bike shop in Maine, you say be persistent, have some patience?
Yeah, like what we're telling our customers is to watch our website because our website updates every night with a new product that comes in, and it usually sells within 24 hours or 48 hours after it goes live on our website.
Have you ever had this problem before?
No, I mean, I've been in business, had Gorham Bike and Ski for 25 years, and I've never seen this type of boom before, ever.
All right. Jean, what do you attribute the boom to? I can guess. Nice weather, people cooped up, way to get outside. Is it that or something more?
No, I think that's it, right? There's obviously so many more people out there traveling by bike or on foot too during this pandemic. And I think bikes are, they're a great way to get outside. There's something you can do straight from your house. There's something you can do with your family. I look outside my window and pretty much any time of day I can see kids and families, spinning around the neighborhood. So it is a great thing that we can do easily. It's a thing you can do by yourself or with your household members, which is what we're all having to do during this pandemic. And I think for many people, they're discovering or they're rediscovering the love of cycling. I think, most of us grew up bicycling and you may have lost it at some point during your life, but being able to rediscover it now, and it's just a great way to be outside and to enjoy all that Maine has to offer in our outdoors.
You must be thrilled about the surge in cycling in Maine. Is there anything you worry about when you see all these bikes out there?
Well, we are thrilled about the surge, and it's great. But I think the other thing that we've been seeing and hearing from people all around the state is that while there are more people outside biking and walking, there are fewer cars on the road, but those cars are driving faster. And we hear this all the time that there's, you know, it's scary to be out there if a car whizzes past you, especially if you're not very comfortable or haven't been doing a lot of riding. So that's something we're really paying attention to. There have sadly been some crashes and fatalities already in the state. And so we are, as you mentioned at the top, launching this new campaign called Slow Maine Down, which is really aimed at encouraging people to, you know, slow down, to pay attention, to see that there are more people out there. They might be in places you haven't expected them as a driver, and to slow down, pay attention, give people lots of space, and for all of us to take responsibility to make our roadways and public ways safe.
Sure. I was looking through some of the information on the campaign, and I was struck by something that I read that said most people in Maine think going about 10 miles over the speed limit is about right. And one can understand, if you've got a long trip on the highway, how 10 miles an hour might save you some time. But this is not appropriate on most streets and in most neighborhoods.
That's right. I mean, you know, you think about the speed limit as, you know, what it is. It's a speed limit, but you also need to think about the driving conditions, right? Like, what's happening around you? Where are you going? You know, I think a lot of us in Maine in particular think about this in the context of like a snowstorm or a rainstorm or dense fog. You slow down. You drive slower during those times because the conditions tell you that it's not safe to drive faster. And I would encourage people to think of the same way as people on the road, like slow down, right? That there's other things happening on the road that we need to pay attention to. And the faster you're driving, the harder it is to react, the slower it is to react. You know, just a few increases of miles per hour can be dramatically more deadly to a pedestrian or a cyclist. So as you're thinking about your driving, you know, paying attention, understanding that the faster you go, it's going to take you longer to slow down. It's going to take you longer to react. You know, you compound that with distracted driving concerns that makes it even worse. So, you know, speed limits are speed limits. And let's think about the road conditions and how to make sure we're safe for everybody that's on the road, drivers, cyclists, walkers, everybody that might be out there.
Sure. And just the difference between 25 and 30 miles per hour is a big difference when it comes to surviving an accident, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some data from actually the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety that shows if you, you know, between 20 miles per hour and 30 miles per hour, you can almost by 15%+ likelihood of being injured or killed in that. So just a couple of miles an hour difference can really have a huge difference. There was one thing that we were reading that I think all of us at the Bicycle Coalition were really struck by, but a crash impact at 45 miles per hour is roughly equivalent to falling from a 7-story building. You don't think of it in that vertical and horizontal way, right? But these speeds can be deadly. And as more people are out there, we really need to be mindful of that and take time to get where we're going.
Jamie, we've talked about some of the reasons people might be buying bicycles right now, and that's staying at home and being with your family because of the pandemic. People are looking for ways to exercise and spend time with people that they love safely. But something else is another way that the pandemic has affected what you do, and that is that many, if not most, of the parts for bicycles are from China. China was the first country hit by the pandemic, and I understand that really affected the supply chain early on. Is it still affected? Is it changing now?
It's just changing now. It was definitely affected for the last couple of months. You know, a lot of the parts come from all over Asia, and they were closed. A lot of their factories were closed in December and January, even into February. So that really stopped the supply chain altogether. They're open now and stuff is moving, but you know, it's about a 8 to 10 week period before, you know, there's dozens of hundreds of parts on a bicycle, and it takes a long time to source all those parts and put them together and then ship them to the United States.
All right, I'm going to start with the questions because so many good ones are coming in. Here's an email from Todd. Cycling in Maine has never been more dangerous. The Lincoln County Sheriff's Department does not enforce the laws written to protect you. Recently, three separate motorists stopped me and said, quote, "Do not ride around here." A week later, I had a beer bottle thrown at my head. I've chosen to leave the road 11 times in the last 4 months because motorists behind me decided to pass while I can only see the oncoming traffic approaching. When I've called the sheriff's department, I get virtually no response. As a cyclist, I'm literally afforded more protection from dogs that chase me via the animal control officer than my local law enforcement. I'm wondering, Jean, is this a story that you hear often, or is Todd's story an outlier story?
No, we hear that story. I mean, that's awful to hear, and I'm you know, sorry Todd's had to face that as so many other people have. And I think it varies where you are in the moment you're on the road, but there is not everywhere sort of an acceptance or an understanding of the rules of the road or acceptance of cyclists as sharing the road. And I think one of the most important things we do is to tell those stories, right, is to have this conversation, to talk to your local officials, to raise awareness of this so that people don't have to face what Todd is describing. But without that sort of public call for better action, for, you know, designing our roads better, for people sharing the road together, and for taking responsibility for that. So the more we can talk about it, I think the more we can start a conversation to make it more acceptable for others to be on the road besides motorists and to make it safer. But it's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of people raising this over and over and over again to really change that culture and to change policies.
We'll go to Don, who's calling from Topsom. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, one of my concerns, I'm a neuroscientist, and my specialty in research is on traumatic brain injury and its effective treatment. And I haven't heard one word during this conversation about the importance of wearing helmets, and good helmets at that. Listening to you chat about the problems with other drivers even reinforces that situation more. And I do a lot of biking. I'm a senior citizen moving here from Atlanta. And I see so many people riding without helmets. And what's even more tragic, as adults, they're riding without helmets with kids following behind them with their kids following behind them without helmets. All it takes is biking at around 4 miles an hour. If you fall off your bike and fall on your head, you're going to have a serious brain injury. And it's easy under the circumstances, without shoulders, without all the problems you're describing. At least you could start by taking adequate protection for yourself and your kids. So
yeah,
like
Don, thank you. Thank you for your call. Jamie, Jean, I want to ask you, it is the law for somebody, is it 18 and under to be wearing a helmet on a bicycle?
Yes, I'm getting the exact age, but yeah.
Is it 16? Okay. And I want to turn to you, Jamie, to ask, Don says we need to have a good helmet. How much does a good helmet cost? How much of... you know, how much are we shelling out for what you would think of as a good helmet?
Well, first of all the helmets have to meet the same U.S. government standards for safety. So whether you're spending $40 on a helmet or $300 on a helmet, relatively, they're going to be just as safe. I mean, there are newer technology, MIPS, which is a design that a lot of the helmets are using now, where it slows down the movement of the brain in the skull as you have an impact with the ground. I think it's more or less about education and getting more people to wear helmets. You know, that's where it really falls.
All right. And Don, before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to say about maybe the proper fitting of a helmet or what people ought to look for when they're thinking about a helmet?
Well, obviously, I think the fitting of a helmet is one of the most important things. Spending $300 on a helmet that doesn't fit you is just a waste of good money, as your speakers could attest. So, yes, it's not only necessary to have the proper technology to slow down the velocity of the brain banging around in the skull cavity, and new helmets can help that considerably. So, but they won't work at all if the fit is not proper. And I see so many people that do ride, especially in Atlanta, with the wrong size helmet, with it tilted to one side to make it look cuter. It's nonsense. and they ought to do better. And so fit is critical. It's just as critical, you're right, as how much you spend. If you can spend a ton of money and don't get the right helmet, it's a waste of money.
All right. Well, Don, thanks for calling. The thing that drives me crazy is when I see people riding with their helmet, that, especially kids, that's not buckled. Sort of what's the point? But thank you so much for calling in. Yeah. I'm going to go to Cheryl.
Well, I would just add, if I could just add real quick, too. We do actually have on our website, on bikemaine.org, we have a video on how to properly put on your helmet. So some tips and tools about how to make sure it's fitting properly with you, because that is really important.
Terrific. We're going to go to Cheryl calling from Old Town. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. There is another side to bike safety on the roads. There was a very disturbing letter to the editor in this week's paper from a gentleman in his 80s who was walking along the edge of what he described as a public dead-end country road and encountered a group of cyclists who were spread out across the road and not wearing masks, huffing and puffing, as he describes it. And he managed to escape up the driveway of a neighbor, but he was very concerned that he could have been infected from whatever they were emitting in their breath. So especially in pandemic time, that's something to be thinking about.
Thanks. Yeah, Cheryl, thank you for calling and talking about that. Jean?
Yeah, I mean, I would say to both these last callers, you know, everybody who's on the road has a responsibility to make it safe. You know, cyclists need to obey the rules of the road. They need to be wearing proper safety equipment. Drivers need to be paying attention. Pedestrians need to be visible, all those different things. And I would say, you know, biking during this pandemic and COVID, we do have some resources on our website about that too, but we have some recommendations, right? I always, when I'm biking, I have a mask with me. I have hand sanitizer with me. If I'm by myself, you know, I'm riding, but if I come close to people, I'm being, you know, paying attention to what that means, giving people good distance. If I have to stop for any reason or be really close to people, I'm using my mask. So there are things that we need to do that are sort of extra precautions in this time. And I think if everyone can just think about what they could personally do on the road to make it safer, then we'll all be doing better.
Jamie, how often is a good idea to replace your helmet?
Well, the standard says, you know, 3 to 5 years or after an impact. So usually the helmet is good for one impact and then you should replace it. So if you have a crash and at that point, you should just replace it.
All right. We are talking about cycling in Maine on Maine Calling. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Rooster Brother, roasting coffee since 1987 in downtown Ellsworth. Learn more at roosterbrother.com. And Bristol Seafood's North Atlantic shrimp, caught in the wild and available, ready to eat, in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
Thousands of immigrants across the country are taking their final step to citizenship during the pandemic. Not in large auditoriums or courtrooms, but from the safety of their cars.
This makes it a lot more personal, almost. It's really fun being able to talk to people as they're driving through and get to hear a little bit of their stories.
I'm Ari Shapiro. Naturalization drive-thrus this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
I came for a job interview at the University of Southern Maine as an economics professor. And the day I came, it was bright blue, cold winter day, and the snow was pristine, and I just fell in love, and I said yes. I love teaching my students, who are almost all from Maine, because they just embody such a work ethic and devotion towards their own learning. I just think they all embody that spirit, that frontier spirit that Maine has. I'm Varshali Mamgayan from Harpswell, and this is my Maine.
This Is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to MainePublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the COVID-19 bicycle boom. My guest, Jamie Wright, who is owner of Gorham Bike and Ski, and Jean Sedaris at the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. She's the executive director. As always, we want to hear from you. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Chris Riley, who is president of the Central Maine chapter of the New England Mountain Bike Association. Chris, thanks for calling in.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Wondering if you've implemented any COVID-specific trail usage changes. Are you encouraging physically distanced rides, and how to do that?
That's a good question. Well, I think the organization has taken some steps as a larger organization, and locally, you know, we have put on hold our regular Wednesday group rides because it's just too challenging to get groups of 10 or 20 together and ride and feel like we're keeping everybody safe. So, but most people are still, you know, obviously people are still riding, and they're riding with their family units, or they're riding with one or two or three or four other friends at most, is what I'm seeing. And people they know are taking similar precautions and leading kind of similar lifestyles as far as their approach to the pandemic. So that's kind of what we're seeing out on the trail, at least in our region, as far as how people are still staying active and staying on bikes.
Well, any trails you want to highlight or recommend today?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's really amazing what's happening in this state. In almost every county, you're seeing an amazing amount of trail growth. I mean, in Central Maine, we've got more projects than we can handle as an organization. And it's growing every year. You know, we're doing projects in the town of Manchester, Augusta, Hollowell, Auburn, Farmington, and I know there's other projects going on in Gorham. The Greater Portland chapter is doing projects in Gorham. There's projects in Carabasset. There's projects in Millinocket. I mean, the state is just booming right now with trail projects because the demand is so huge for people that want to get out and ride mountain bike trails.
Chris, let me ask you this. Is there a resource where people can find out about all these, look and find out what kind of trail might be near their home?
The one resource that's most prolifically used is called Trail Forks. And it's a phone app, and you can use the GPS on your phone and find trails that are near where you live or where you are located. So, you know, when I travel, I use it to find trails near me. And it's updated by locals, so you can get relatively reliable information on the trail system that you want to ride, whether it's open, the technical challenges that are part of the trail system, how long it is, et cetera. It's a pretty great resource, and I'd say most people are using that.
And did you say Trail Fork? F-O-R-K? Yeah,
F-O-R-K-S.
Great. Okay. And we'll make sure and post something on our webpage and Facebook page. Thanks so much for calling in, Chris. Chris is the president of the Central Maine chapter of the New England Mountain Bike Association. We'll go to Nancy, who's calling from Thomaston. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Let me preface this by saying that this is a car culture, and it's not going away. And I've been an avid cyclist all my life, and over the years, the obvious increase in traffic, but also driving habits, have become so bad. Last summer, I was nicked on my bike, and it was done on purpose. And that was not unusual. I was commuting to work. People would accelerate on purpose to frighten me. And my question is, has there been any consideration given to cyclists like walkers cycling against traffic instead of with it, even with mirrors? I would just feel so much safer being
Jean, I know this is something that's been studied. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have any specific data around that, but I know the guidelines and the rules are for cyclists to ride with traffic, and I think for a lot of reasons, it's visibility is for how you can be seen, and walkers riding walking against traffic. So I don't have a lot of information about the studies. If there's more information, I'd be eager to see it, but that is currently the rules of the road.
Nancy, thanks for your call. We'll move to Lewiston and Noel. Hi, Noel. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I just wanted to comment about the campaign to slow traffic down. I definitely want to commend that. And one of the things that communities that are not in Maine that have used as a tool to do that is traffic cameras. Essentially, you know, it records the car at one point and then another and does the math and can notify the law enforcement that someone was speeding and as reliable, if not more reliable, than radar, widely used in Europe. But in Maine, we're not allowed to use traffic cameras in that way. And so I think that would be a great thing to improve traffic safety for pedestrians and everybody if we got on using that. And also, it's very dangerous for law enforcement to do traffic stops. So that's something that's on my mind when I'm always encouraging of them to do more traffic enforcement. Thank you.
Yeah. Gene, do you know, has there been any kind of a movement to try to have traffic cameras in Maine? Does the Bicycle Coalition of Maine support that?
We actually are starting to look into that and doing some research around the country to see what has been in place and what kind of information we can gather. It sounds like that conversation has actually been picking up a little bit in different circles. That question of can we do this? Is it, you know, not having to pay officers or have officers do those traffic stops and rather use them by camera? So that is something that's on our radar and we're looking into it.
All right. Thanks for your call, Noel. We'll go to Mike calling from Cape Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Love your show. Yeah, I was like, you know, I love this traffic safety, you know, stuff, but how about cycling courtesy? Because I can't tell you how many times I'm on the road. And there'll be like three guys in front of me dressed like they're like they're training for the Tour de France, and they wouldn't move over if, you know, for whatever reason, you know. And I'm like, why is that legal? I mean, if cops are going to be checking on cars that are speeding and dangerous to cyclists, I mean, the cyclists, I mean, some of them don't, they really don't want to share the road. I mean,
yeah, Gene,
really,
let me go to you, Gene. We've been talking about etiquette already during this show. What is the etiquette if you're riding with other cyclists? If you feel a car behind you, do you need to move over?
So in Maine here, there's not any explicit prohibitions on running or riding two or more abreast. And so that's part of our kind of traffic code. And, you know, for cyclists, I mean, again, everyone, I would encourage everyone to really be courteous and think about what you're doing. But as far as the rules of the roads are, cyclists are allowed to ride two abreast. They're also allowed to take the lane if they need to. So if they're, you know, avoiding hazards on the road or if the travel lane's too narrow, I find when I'm biking a lot of times there might be a car or a truck in a bike lane or on a shoulder and having to move in. So that is allowed. And again, just encouraging everyone to think, you know, think about who's around them and share the road.
All right, Mike, thanks for your call. An email from Greg, just a heads up, a good friend, a very careful and responsible retired engineer, was struck because a pickup truck driver was blinded by the sun. So extra care at sunrise and sunset. I love this reminder, Gene, because I think that a lot of people are thinking about their own experience, but maybe need to be more aware of what the experience of everybody else is as well, especially if the car's coming the other direction. If the sun is at your back, you may not realize how the sun is affecting oncoming traffic.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that. I remember, you know, once, I don't know why this was really stuck in my brain, but when I'm on my bike, I think I'm so visible, right? I've got a light, I've got a bright color. And then occasionally I'm in my car and I see a cyclist and I think, wow, that actually, those things are not as visible as I think they are when I'm the cyclist. And so, yeah, taking a pause to think about what the road looks like if you're coming at it from a different angle or how you might see things or boy, that sun coming at you, right, can really affect, or a blind curb, or all those things. So all of that's important to remember. And I find when I'm switching roles of who I am on the road, it does let me better understand what other people might be seeing too.
Right. I want to go to an email from M. I picked up a bike at a yard sale and it needs new shifters and cables. I'd like to have a bike shop do this, even though I could probably figure it out with hours on YouTube. It is not a high-end bike, and I understand bike shops are busy. Is this the type of repair work, something that bike shops are willing to do on a cheapo bike? I've always thought of bike shops as for folks who could drop thousands of dollars on the coolest new model. Jamie, will you fix up an old clunker?
Absolutely. You know, we get these kind of questions all the time, but we work on basically any bicycle that comes into the shop. We work on people's wheelbarrows. You know, you can bring any bicycle to probably any bike shop in the state of Maine, and they'll take care of it for you.
All right. Well, there you go, Em, your answer. I had a feeling that was the answer. We'll go to Richard in Farmington. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi. Just wanted to mention the e-bikes for older people. I've always been pretty active. About 5 years ago, I found out I was born with a bicuspid valve, and they had to put a new valve in my heart. And since then, it's not like original equipment, so I'm not quite the biker I used to be, but I got an e-bike this last winter, and it has been a game changer for me. Also, I wanted to mention Cycle GPS. If anybody is doing roads and gravel roads, stuff like that, Cycle GPS is a great app. It'll show you different routes that other cyclists have taken. So sometimes you'll be on a road, and if you're using like Google Maps, you'll go someplace and it's not the road you thought it was, and you wanted to, you know, you'd rather have a different road. Cycle GPS works pretty good. I also wanted to mention Byron mirrors. Helps an awful lot to have a mirror on a bicycle. And I've got a Byron mirror. I can kind of see people coming and see and judge what they're going to do, you know.
Richard, thank you so much for all that information. Jamie, you mentioned that you got a lot of e-bikes in. Are they surging in popularity?
Yeah, they've been surging for the last couple of years, and they're selling well now. People really are gravitating towards electric bikes because, you know, all the bikes that we sell, they're called pedal assist. So you have to pedal, and then it adds power. So like the gentleman that just called, you know, people that maybe are aging out, have medical conditions. This is a great way for them to get back out and ride and get some exercise, but, you know, the motor helps them out a little bit.
Richard, thanks so much for calling in and telling us about your experience. Joining us now is Gabe Perkins. He's a founding board member of Mahoosic Pathways and since 2014 has served as executive director. Gabe, I bet you wish you were out on your bike right now. How have things changed to adapt to the pandemic?
Oh, well, this thanks for having me on. This episode is really well-timed for a couple reasons. We've had a ton of new trail users in Western Maine, but we're also adding new trails, right? So we're putting in purpose-built mountain bike trails in the Bethel Community Forest and in Rumford. And then we're also increasing access because as there's more people using trails, we've been working to create this access. And we announced just last week with our partners at the Conservation Fund and other local partners, the purchase of 15,000 acres of these really well-managed lands in and around Western Maine that for my use and our use at our Mahoosic Pathways will create these permanently protected recreation connections between Mount Abram Resort in Greenwood, which just opened a new mountain bikes park, so that's another new trail system, with our Bethel Village Trail system, and then on up to the existing trails near Sunday River. And the other thing that's happening is, and why this is so well-timed, is, and this couples so well with the Slow Maine Down campaign, is a mountain bike-specific awareness campaign that we just quietly launched last week with our partners at Bike Borderlands called Ride with Gratitude. And so this campaign not only acknowledges the uptick in trail usage, but it's a simple concept, right, to help all trail riders better understand how these how special these trails are and how access to these lands is. And it's something we can't take for granted, particularly in these times. We want to make sure that there's access that's permanent and protected. And we have to be careful and listen to landowners and trail managers and residents, and that's going to help us navigate through the pandemic and as more people start getting on bikes.
Well, Gabe, thanks so much for giving us a call. I welcome or invite you to post information on our Facebook page so that we can get that out there, both about the new trails and about the new campaign. That's Gabe Perkins, a founding board member of Mahoosic Pathways. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments about biking in Maine. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom, uma.edu. And Dead River Company, committed to keeping Maine's homes and businesses warm and proud to be part of celebrating Maine's bicentennial, deadriver.com. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On July 2, 1863, Joshua Chamberlain led the 20th Maine Regiment during the Battle of Gettysburg at Little Round Top. Born in Brewer, Chamberlain was a college professor of modern languages at Bowdoin College who had volunteered to join the Union Army during the Civil War. During the fierce battle, the regiment ran out of ammunition. Chamberlain ordered his men to fix their bayonets and charge down into the Confederate Army. That action, along with the heroic efforts of other Union troops, turned the tide of the battle.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Dean Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine!
I'm Greg Dalton. On the next Climate One, is it possible to maintain a consumption-driven economy that doesn't trash the environment or lead to massive inequality?
The only thing it requires is a massive cultural and political movement changing the rules that constrain capitalism. But as soon as we can do that, we're done. We know how to fix this problem.
Reimagining capitalism on the next Climate One.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's topic is bicycling in Maine. Joining me, Jean Sedaris, Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and Jamie Wright, owner of Gorham Bike and Ski. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Nate Davis. He is a Rockland City Councilor and co-founder of the collaborative workspace in Rockland called Steelhouse. He's also co-chair of Rockland Rolls, the bicycling committee of Renew Rockland. Nate, thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you for having me.
I understand you've been part of what you call an experiment in Rockland to reclaim street space. Tell us about that and how the pandemic is affecting this experiment.
Well, like many people, the members of the city council have been concerned about gathering too many people inside restaurants, inside retail stores, just indoors in general. And so we, like many other people in the world, we're trying to figure out how to encourage people to dine outside and to shop outside and just to move more of their activities outside, and how to promote commerce and try to maybe not save, because that sounds like we're heading off a precipice, but certainly promote economic activity in our local businesses and the local business community. So what we've been doing is closing our Main Street experimentally for, let's see, the first try was 2 weekends ago, then we did it again last weekend, and I think and hope we'll do it in the future. The logistics are a bit complicated because our Main Street is State Route 1, so it involves cooperation with the State Department of Transportation and ensuring that stores can still get deliveries and all sorts of things like that. But we've closed Main Street during these times to motor vehicle traffic and opened it up to pedestrian traffic. So some people call it a closing. I think of it as an opening where the street is open to people on foot and to human bodies and to restaurants spreading out to create dining spaces outside.
Are the streets open to bicycles at that point?
No, they're not open to bicycles, but, well, officially no. In practice, people do ride through. It's mostly geared towards pedestrians, and it's just a few blocks.
All right. What is Rockland doing as far as encouraging cycling?
Well, a few things. Over the last few years, we've made a number of incremental infrastructure improvements, things like getting more and more regularly spaced bike racks downtown, painting shared lane markings on the road. So shared lane markings, your listeners have probably seen them, but they're these sort of chevron icons with bicycles that are painted in the middle of roads to indicate that, or in the middle of lanes, to indicate that users of those lanes, whether cars or cyclists, should expect other forms of traffic. We're going to be installing bike racks at City Hall. We've installed a much greater variety of signage, share the road signage, things like that. So it's sort of follow your nose type improvements, and we're gradually picking up these things and installing them as we can.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for calling in. That's Nate Davis, a Rockland City Councilor. I appreciate your call today. I want to go here to an email from Barbara. Please tell all bikers to announce their passing to pedestrians on the path or sidewalk or road in front of them by shouting, "Passing on the left. I am a senior citizen who often walks the Green Belt, a great path in South Portland, and would very much appreciate a warning from approaching bikers so I can move even farther to the right as they pass. Again, Jean, etiquette.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, communicate, right? Whoever, especially on those paths, say what you're doing, talk to the people you're might be passing on your left, people behind you, if you're going to be slowing down or stopping, right? So, yeah, it just comes down to etiquette. Be aware of who's around you and communicate with those folks.
All right. Meg on Facebook writes, we've seen fewer bikers taking the lane and are grateful as we live on a highly popular yet windy and hilly route. My question is, can bicyclists be more considerate in the neighborhoods they bike through? For instance, not yelling back and forth at 6 a.m. and being mindful of and friendly toward homeowners backing out of their driveways or fetching their mail. You know, even though I am a bike rider, I have also noticed bike riders yelling at each other very early in the morning. Jean?
Yeah, I think you mentioned earlier that you're a morning bike rider too. So, you know, I feel like I'm a broken record here, but just being mindful of where you are, who you're around, and, you know, make sure our roads and public ways are for everybody.
All right. We'll go to Elizabeth, who's calling from Canton. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, everybody, we're all talking about the pandemic and how that's affecting cyclists and stuff. But we also have another public crisis going on, and that seems to be, you know, police impropriety and over-policing for profit. And it seems like a lot of people are advocating for controlling our roadways and our bicyclists through policing as opposed to through public norm changing and through changing people's ideas of what it means to be on the roads in a safe way. I'm wondering, you know, is that really the appropriate way to go?
Jean, thoughts?
I've couldn't catch quite her whole question, but yeah, I mean, I think the conversations like this, right, thinking about public awareness, having conversations about how to do this, how to make our roadways and public ways safer, and there's a lot of different ways that can be, we can approach that, and I think changing cultural norms and acceptance of who's on the road and who can be on the road is one. You know, we're also, the Bicycle Coalition also aims to think about how we design our roadways so that they're more welcoming and safer to lots of people. And there's a lot of, you know, relatively low cost ways to design an area, especially in downtown areas where you maybe spend a sidewalk or even just a brightly painted crosswalk can slow cars down and make it more welcoming. So I think there's a lot of different ways to approach this. And what we're really eager to do is have this conversation and find, you know, new creative ways to make our public ways safer and find out what works. And that might vary, you know, town to town, location to location. But let's have the conversation about it and figure out how to do it well.
All right. Mark on Facebook says, I feel the popularity of gravel bikes are due to the desire to get onto lower traveled road. Maybe the panelists could talk about gravel bikes. Jamie, do you think he's talking about fat tire bikes, or are those two different things?
Those are two different things. So, yes, there's been a surge in gravel bikes over the last couple of years, and it's basically a road bike that's got wider tires. It's a little bit more substantial of a frame. But it's true, a lot of road riders have gone to gravel bikes, especially in parts of the country or even parts of the state where there's just more dirt roads. So they ride their road bikes on dirt roads, and they're called gravel bikes. There's been a strong market for those over the last couple of years, and it's actually a new race category over the last couple of years that are very popular.
Oh, interesting. Let me ask you, if you can't afford multiple bikes, can you change out tires or wheels to accommodate different surfaces?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, some people put slick tires on their mountain bikes and they do training in the spring just on the road. But as it is with anything, you pick a bike that you're going to use most of the time. And you usually do that. If you're a mountain biker, you usually have a mountain bike that's set up just the way you want. If you're a road rider, you have a road bike that's set up just the way you want. And sure, there's lots of people that can afford more than one bike.
All right. We'll go to Christine, who's calling from Bethel. Hi, Christine. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to comment on, there's been a lot of mention of safety issues and also etiquette of cyclists on the road. And I just wanted to say that I think with this bicycling boom, there's the opportunity to really seize this moment and advocate for, in a more stronger way, safer on-road separated facilities for cyclists, and also could be on-road separated multi-use trails as a temporary kind of demonstration project, similar to what is happening in Rockland, but more of a long-distance facility rather than just a main street. And just to say that with more people biking, you're going to have more people of different abilities, different ages, and different comfort levels. So we need to think about, how do we accommodate them as best as we possibly can in a safe way, whether that's expanding trail networks or expanding multi-use trails, and expanding separated bicycle infrastructure on the road in a more aggressive way than we have over the last few decades.
Christine, thanks. Jean?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you know, change really happens locally. And so being an advocate now when the conversation's here is critical. The Bicycle Coalition has this program called Community Spokes, and it's advocates across the state who are working locally to make those changes. And we provide tools and resources and backup and support and sort of a national voice to the folks that are actually, you know, doing the really hard work on the ground. So we encourage more and more people to get involved with that, to talk to your elected officials, to talk to your cities and towns, and use this moment to really see if you can get some permanent things in place. And we all know that, you know, anytime there's a pathway, people use it, right? So the more opportunities there are to go and to be able to bike and walk, I think this is the time to start calling loud and repeatedly with your local town to make that happen.
Christine, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Scott, who's calling from Norway. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Scott Vlan from the Center for an Ecology-Based Economy in Norway. Interesting that Christine just called, because we're working together to try to close a section of a breakdown lane between downtown Norway and a recreation area at the other end of the lake. But on the flip side of that, in our area, there are many places, and this is kind of in a response to the motorist that called in before about bicyclists taking up the lane. There are a number of places here, especially our main street and a lot of our rural roads. So our main street, there's no safe place for a cyclist other than in the middle of the lane that has to slow down. The cars have to follow us through Main Street because we either get backed into on one side of the road or we get doored on the other side. So, and it, you know, we figured it would slow a motorist down about 30 seconds on the length of our little downtown strip here. And then on a lot of our rural roads, we have soft shoulders. And if you ride right up against that soft shoulder, it encourages trucks and cars to try to squeeze by you when there's oncoming traffic. And if you go into that soft shoulder, it can be really dangerous. So the safe place there is to take the lane and encourage motorists to treat cyclists as like a piece of farm machinery going down the road where they have to slow down, wait for it safe, and then pass like they're passing a vehicle.
That's a great analogy. Like, yeah. And Gene, yeah. I want to turn this back to you. And this is your point about different communities are different. And to Scott's point, motorists maybe stop a moment and think about, is there a reason that bicycle might be there, those bicyclists?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is throughout Maine, it's a rural state, and the roads aren't necessarily, or in many places at all, designed for multiple types of users. And so that's a challenge, and thinking both creatively about how that can be improved, but immediately, what are the expectations of people on the road to make sure everybody is safe?
Scott, thanks for your call. I want to go quickly to Zach on Facebook. He writes, I want to comment on the earlier comment about cyclists announcing on your left to walkers when passing. This is a good chance to advocate for my favorite bike accessory, the bell. The bell announces your presence well in advance, and you don't need to open your mouth, which is great during the pandemic. So we just have a couple minutes left, Jamie. I want to talk about safety accessories. Somebody earlier mentioned a mirror to be able to see if cars are approaching. Zach wants to mention a bell. What about lights? Do you recommend people have, I've seen those lights where even during the daytime, they're flickering as somebody rides.
Yes. I mean, I use them on my bike almost every day. Daylight running lights, I guess you could call them, but you know, a white flashing light in the front and a red flashing light in the rear. Obviously it works at night. It's a state law that you have to have a light on the front of your bike, a white light on the front of your bike with reflectors or a flashing rear light on the back. But that's probably the number one thing that you can do. I mean, you can wear high vis clothes, you know, screaming yellow jackets or a jersey or something like that. But you can see those flashing white and red lights from literally a half a mile away or more. So people definitely notice you.
All right. Well, I really appreciate both of you being on the show today. I do notice more calls and emails and questions coming in we haven't been able to get to. And some of these are people wanting to tell people about new trails or new places to ride. So I encourage you to go on to Maine Calling's Facebook page and look up today's post and add to that so that others can learn about your initiatives. And thank you to Gene and Jamie for spending the hour with us. Gene Sedaris, the Bicycle Coalition of Maine's Executive Director, and Jamie Wright, the owner of Gorham Bike and Ski. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. This program will be rebroadcast at 7. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, by visiting mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. Have a happy and safe holiday.